listening to CPR, communitypublicradio.org. And this is Weekday World. I'm your host, Don DeBar. With a report of some of the news and events of the past 24 hours from the CPR Newsroom. From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
Tuesday was the opening day in New York of a week of speeches by the heads of state from countries around the world. The annual United Nations General Assembly General Debate kicked off in New York on Tuesday morning. One of the first speakers was U.S. President Donald Trump. It was, by all measures, a very unusual speech in the formal setting of the United Nations. Artizilia Petrenko has more.
For some reason, the American president decided to begin by telling the entire world how his administration was doing a good job.
In less than 2 years, my administration has accomplished more than almost any administration in the history of our country. America's so true. Didn't expect that reaction, but that's okay.
The general reception by the audience was rather warm, but more awkward moments were to come. Donald Trump stressed that his country would not intervene in other nations' affairs and basically said that Washington will stop telling other countries what to do. And almost immediately after that, the American president got to doing just that. Tehran was viciously told off, and the government there was called many things, including a brutal and corrupt dictatorship, and also the world's greatest sponsor of terrorism. Everyone else around the world was told to start or continue isolating Iran.
Iran's leaders sow chaos, death, and destruction. They do not respect their neighbors or borders or the sovereign rights of nations. Instead, Iran's leaders plunder the nation's resources to enrich themselves and to spread mayhem across the Middle East and far beyond. The Iranian people are rightly outraged that their leaders have embezzled billions of dollars from Iran's treasury, seized valuable portions of the economy, and looted the people's religious endowments, all to line their own pockets and send their proxies to wage war. Not good. Iran's neighbors have paid a heavy toll for the region's agenda of aggression and expansion. That is why so many countries in the Middle East strongly supported my decision to withdraw the United States from the horrible 2015 Iran nuclear deal and reimpose nuclear sanctions. The Iran deal was a windfall for Iran's leaders. In the years since the deal was reached, Iran's military budget grew nearly 40%. The dictatorship used the funds to build nuclear-capable missiles, increase internal repression, finance terrorism, and fund havoc and slaughter in Syria and Yemen. The United States has launched a campaign of economic pressure to deny the regime the funds it needs to advance its bloody agenda. Last month, we began reimposing hard-hitting nuclear sanctions that have been lifted under the Iran deal. Additional sanctions will resume November 5th, and war will follow. And we are working with countries that import Iranian crude oil to cut their purchases substantially. We cannot allow the world's leading sponsor of terrorism to possess the planet's most dangerous weapons. We cannot allow a regime that chants death to America and that threatens Israel with annihilation to possess the means to deliver a nuclear warhead to any city on Earth. Just can't do it. We ask all nations to isolate Iran's regime as long as its aggression continues. And we ask all nations to support Iran's people as they struggle to reclaim their religious and righteous destiny.
That was President Donald Trump at the UN General Assembly on Tuesday. And thank you to Ilya Petrenko from RT for that report. President Trump didn't have to wait long for a response from Iran. Iran's President Hassan Rouhani was also at the UN General Assembly Tuesday, and the following are his remarks translated into English in their entirety.
In the name of God, the merciful, the compassionate, praise be to God, the Lord of the universe, and peace and blessings be upon the messenger of God and his family and companions. Madam President, I take this opportunity to felicitate your election to the presidency of the 73rd session of the United Nations General Assembly. We have assembled here today as the world is suffering from recklessness and disregard of some states for international values and institutions. The message of our presence here is that the preservation of interest and security in the world in the least costly manner is solely possible through the cooperation of and coordination among countries. However, it is unfortunate that we are witnessing rulers in the world who think they can secure their interests better, or at least in the short term ride public sentiments and gain popular support through the fomenting of extremist nationalism and racism and through xenophobic tendencies resembling a Nazi disposition, as well as through the trampling of global rules and undermining international institutions, even through preposterous and abnormal acts such as convening a high-level meeting of the Security Council. This illusion should be cast away once and for all, that one can aspire to securing more peace and security at the cost of denying others peace and security. We should not allow the breathing space for and growth of the line of thinking that holds others to ransom through the artificial creation of insecurity. Along this track, confronting multilateralism is not a sign of strength. Rather, it is a symptom of the weakness of intellect. It betrays an inability in understanding a complex and interconnected world. Under such circumstances, negligence or inefficacy of international institutions can endanger world peace. Those seeking dominance and hegemony are enemies of peace and the perpetrators of war. The government of the United States of America, at least the current administration, seems determined to render all international institutions ineffectual. This government, having withdrawn from a multilateral agreement adopted by the Security Council in contravention of the rules and norms of international law, invites the Islamic Republic of Iran to bilateral talks. An administration that is inviting Iran to engage in talks is not ready to consult its own experts, nor willing to recognize the requirements of a modern state, including the paramount principle of continuity of state responsibility, and hence openly violates state obligations undertaken by its predecessor. On what basis and criteria can we enter into an agreement with an administration misbehaving such as this? Any talks should be within the framework and in continuation of the JCPOA and Security Council Resolution 2231, and not in a framework of breaching them and reverting to the past. It is ironic that the U.S. government does not even conceal its plan for overthrowing the same government it invites to talks. Distinguished colleagues, the approach of the Islamic Republic of Iran in the field of foreign policy has been based on multilateralism and compliance with the recognized principles of international law. Our respect for the Non-Proliferation Treaty and the long and difficult negotiations with the group of 5+1, which led to the conclusion of the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, the JCPOA, illustrates a clear manifestation of this approach. We are pleased that the international community did not acquiesce to the U.S. government's unilateral and illegal withdrawal from the JCPOA and adopted a categorical position vis-a-vis that decision. The JCPOA is the outcome of more than a decade of diplomatic efforts and a period of intensive negotiations to resolve an artificial crisis. This document was unanimously approved by the Security Council Resolution 2231 and codified into an international obligation. According to this resolution, all countries and international and regional organizations were called upon to support the implementation of the JCPOA and to refrain from any actions that undermine implementation of commitments under the JCPOA. Based on 12 consecutive reports of the International Atomic Energy Agency, the IAEA, Iran has thus far complied with all of its commitments. However, the United States, from the very beginning, never remained faithful to its obligations. Later, the current administration, resorting to flimsy excuses and in open violation of its commitments, finally withdrew from the accord. The United Nations should not allow its decisions to fall victim to the domestic election and propaganda games of some of its members, and should not allow any member states to dodge the execution of its international commitments. Additionally, the United States also pressures other countries to violate the nuclear accord. And more dangerously, the United States is threatening all countries and international organizations with punishment if they comply with Security Council Resolution 2231. It is the first time in the history of the United Nations that such a general invitation to violation of law is coupled with threatening law abiders with punishment. This is not just peculiar to the JCPOA, but a pattern that even applies to the U.S. approach to the International Criminal Court. We appreciate the efforts of the international community, the European Union, Russia, and China, in supporting the implementation of the JCPOA and consider the full realization of the commitment stipulated in it a precondition for the survival of this significant accomplishment of diplomacy. Ladies and gentlemen, unlawful unilateral sanctions in themselves constitute a form of economic terrorism and a breach of the right to development. The economic war that the United States has initiated under the rubric of new sanctions not only targets the Iranian people, but also entails harmful repercussions for the people of other countries. And that war has caused a disruption in the state of global trade. The Iranian people have demonstrated their unwavering resilience during the past 40 years, despite the difficulties and constraints caused by sanctions, and have shown that they can overcome this difficult phase as well. The multi-millennial history of our country demonstrates that Iran and Iranians have never broken in the face of a storm of events, not even been bowed. I state here in clear, unambiguous terms that the United States policy vis-a-vis the Islamic Republic of Iran has been wrong from the beginning, and its approach of resisting the wishes of the Iranian people, as manifested in numerous elections, is doomed to failure. Iran, with its historical and civilizational longevity, rich cultural heritage, and foremost geopolitical position, is an undeniable reality. The policy of engagement and cooperation with Iran has produced positive outcomes for other nations, as best reflected in Iran's cooperation with friendly countries in the fight against terrorism. The United States' understanding of international relations is authoritarian. In its estimation, might makes right. Its understanding of power, not of legal and legitimate authority, is reflected in bullying and imposition. No state and nation can be brought to the negotiating table by force. And if so, what follows is the accumulation in the grapes of wrath of those nations to be reaped later by the oppressors. We concur that at the end of the day, there is no better way but dialogue. However, dialogue is two ways. It should be based on equality, justice, and human integrity and honor, and conducted in accordance with the rules and norms of international law. The United Nations Security Council Resolution 2231 is not a piece of paper. We invite you to return to that council resolution. We invite you to come back to the negotiating table you left. If you dislike the JCPOA because it is the legacy of your domestic political rivals, then we invite you to come back to the Security Council resolution. We invite you to remain in the international institutions. Do not engage in imposing sanctions. Sanctions and extremism are two sides of the same coin. Extremism involves negating the thinking of others, and sanctions negate the life and prosperity of people. For dialogue to take place, there is no need for a photo opportunity. The two sides can listen to each other right here in this assembly. I am starting the dialogue right here and state in unequivocal terms that the question of international security is not a toy in American domestic politics. The United Nations is not a part of the United States administration. Dialogue can resume in this assembly from the same point and by the same person who left the dialogue table and walked away from the accord. Beginning the dialogue starts with ending threats and unjust sanctions that negate the principles of ethics and international law. Our proposal is clear. Commitment for commitment. Violation for violation. Threat for threat. And step for step. Instead of talk for talk. What Iran says is clear. No war, no sanctions, no threats, no bullying. Just acting according to the law and the fulfillment of obligations. We support peace and democracy in the entire Middle East. We consider nuclear knowledge an imperative and nuclear weapons prohibited. As victims of terrorism in the past and today, we have always been and will always remain in the forefront of genuine confrontation with terrorism. Today, we mourn the martyrdom of tens of innocent people who were recently murdered on Saturday in cold blood by terrorists who shamelessly accepted responsibility from a number of Western capitals for their heinous crime. In interviews with some Western-based broadcasting outfits that are financed by petrodollars. In Iran, we have condemned all acts of terrorism without equivocation and will continue to do so. We welcome the strong statement from the Security Council on this issue. But why can the leaders of these terrorist operations, including the organization that has publicly claimed responsibility for Saturday's crime, live and operate freely in Western countries and even openly solicit funds? Are these activities not in violation of international counterterrorism norms? Why have the official state financiers of anti-Iranian terrorist organizations with a record of financing Al-Qaeda, ISIS, and Al-Nusra not only been spared any punishment, but are supported and armed? If you want the world public to take your claim of fighting terrorism seriously, it is imperative to start a joint global campaign to fight this scourge, irrespective of the victims or culprits. Distinguished colleagues, in the same vein, from the very beginning of the crisis in Syria, we have warned against any foreign intervention in the internal affairs of this country and the use of unlawful means, including supporting extremist and terrorist groups in order to exert pressure on the government of Syria, and have consistently emphasized that the crisis can only be resolved through intra-Syrian dialogue. To this end, the presence of our military advisors in Syria has been at the request of the Syrian government and consistent with international law, and has aimed at assisting the Syrian government in combating extremist terrorism. Iran, Russia, and Turkey, in cooperation with the government of Syria and other Syrian parties, have succeeded through the Astana process, the third summit meeting of which took place in Tehran earlier this month, in playing a positive role in reducing tensions in Syria, and in their last common effort have prevented escalation and bloodshed in the Idlib region. We have witnessed a tragic humanitarian catastrophe in Yemen over the past 3 years, which has caused the destruction of infrastructure, the killing and injury of hundreds of thousands, the displacement of millions of innocent people, and the occurrence of widespread famine and chronic disease. These inhuman acts represent clear examples of crimes against humanity and war crimes. The crisis in Yemen can be resolved solely through intra-Yemeni talks and without foreign interference. And to this end, we are ready to assist in any possible way. The most pressing crisis in the Middle East, however, is the question of Palestine. The passage of time cannot and must not justify occupation. The innumerable crimes of Israel against the Palestinians would not have been possible without the material and military assistance and political and propaganda support of the United States. Israel, equipped with a nuclear arsenal and blatantly threatening others with nuclear annihilation, presents the most daunting threat to regional and global peace and stability. The abhorrent U.S. decision to transfer its embassy in Israel to Jerusalem and the recent enactment of the racist Jewish state law are violations of international law and norms, and unmistakable manifestations of apartheid. Madam President, the expansion of relations with neighbors and the creation of a more secure and more developed region are among the main priorities of Iran's foreign policy. A few weeks ago, Iran, along with other four coastal states, signed the Convention on the Legal Status of the Caspian Sea, which will strengthen good neighborliness and bring prosperity and progress for all of the coastal states. We also desire the same relations with our southern neighbors in the Persian Gulf. We believe in the formation of a collective mechanism for the Persian Gulf region, with the presence and participation of all regional countries. The security of the Persian Gulf and the Strait of Hormuz has always been important for us. And just as we defended this security during the war imposed on us by Iraq, we will confront any and all disruptive efforts in this critical waterway in the future. We espouse a peaceful view in political and international issues and have not sought, nor do we seek, war with any country. Iran does not need an empire. Iran is an empire in terms of its civilization and its culture, not through political domination. Iran has served as the link between East and West and will continue to do so, remaining a meticulous guardian for a world free from violence. The Islamic Republic of Iran is the same state that understood the fascistic nature of the Ba'athist regime in Iraq before anyone else in the world and bravely persisted its aggression against us. We fought against the Ba'ath Party of Iraq before Kuwait was occupied by it. The Islamic Republic of Iran is the same state that was on the forefront of the struggle against Taliban terrorism and gave up martyrs in that struggle. We fought against Al-Qaeda and the Taliban before the attacks on New York and Washington, D.C. The Islamic Republic of Iran is the same state that fought against Daesh, a fake, distorted representation of Islam. We were engaged in the fight against Daesh before their operations in Paris, London, and Brussels. Appreciate these historical realities about Iran. Quit imposing sanctions and end extremism. The world will not have a better friend than Iran if peace is what you seek. I thank you for your attention.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.
Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter LaBelle. One of the most important, if not the most important, pillars of Western society is the rule of law and the equal application of the law. This is now being put into doubt. We are told now it is the court of credibility that rules, whatever that means. Is the Kavanaugh nomination a game changer? Crosstalking the rule of law, I'm joined by my guest, Jason Nichols in Washington. He's a progressive commentator and democratic strategist. In West Palm Beach, we have Dr. Gina Loudon. She is a psychology expert and host of America Trends with Dr. Gina. And in Atlanta, we have Brian Crabtree. He is the host of the Brian Crabtree radio show. All right, crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump in anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Gina, let me go to you first in West Palm Beach. It's been floated around by, well, specifically by the senator from Hawaii, that basically it is now about the court of credibility. I don't know where that court is, okay? I don't think anyone on this program or even watching it would like to be accused in the court of credibility. What happened to the rule of law, Gina?
It's a great question that I wish I could answer. We've come to a place where we're literally examining the possibility of innocent until accused. That's a very scary thing. We've seen it throughout history where the politically correct lot gets to decide who has credibility and who doesn't. And that is a very scary thought if you look back at world history. They are absolutely willing to thwart the rule of law. But we should have known this about the regressive left, honestly, because they started down this path with the whole idea of illegal immigration, which also thwarts the rule of law. So this is a continuation of the dismantling of the constitutional governance of the United States. And I hope that the citizens react harshly and with everything they've got, because there's no way that a constitutional government can be maintained under such circumstances.
Okay, Jason, Brett Kavanaugh wants to sit on the highest court of the land and interpret the Constitution as he understands it. But is he being given the protections of the Constitution as he goes through this nomination process? Go ahead, Jason.
Absolutely. And I disagree with your last guest. I disagree with Gina. I think that what everyone wants is due process, and that's both on the right and the left. I think what we want is a full investigation from the FBI, and I think Brett Kavanaugh is entitled to that, as is his accuser. They both should have the opportunity to have their case proven, rather than just for things to be rushed through. Senator Chuck Grassley said before that he wanted to move on, which I think is a poor way of approaching this. We really need to give everyone the opportunity to state their piece, have a full investigation. Mark Judge needs to go before the Senate committee and actually have due process. And that benefits Brett Kavanaugh and his accuser, Dr. Ford.
OK, well, Brian, I mean, if you look at this whole sordid story with hardly any evidence whatsoever, and evidence that there never will be, with the passage of time and the dulling of memories. And I don't think it's a coincidence it all came out after the confirmation process here. I mean, what I see in reflecting upon what Jason said is that the left keeps moving the goalpost here. I mean, I don't think they want any justice here. They want power. That's what they want. Brian.
Well, they want to thwart power, and that's they also want to thwart the will of the people. The people have elected Trump. Elections have consequences. President Obama told us that many times, and here are the consequences. The left can't deal with consequences, and the left certainly hasn't been very good at dealing with accountability. I do, however, think we should believe the women in this case in Kavanaugh's confirmation. We have a couple of women who says 30-some-odd years ago, while in high school, teenage boys were acting like teenage boys and girls. But we have dozens of women for the last three decades who have known Judge Brett Kavanaugh, who've said he's a fine man, he's a good man, they've always been treated well by him. And then we have additional women, outnumbering the number, who say that he had committed some sort of sexual act, who say he was never there, they never saw that behavior during that time. So which women do we believe? Do we believe the ones that fit our political narrative, which are limited, or do we believe the ones that fit what seems to me to be the truth, which are numerous? It to me, the polarization and the division of the United States at this point in our history is chilling, and it's an existential threat to our future, because we're not interested in the truth any longer. We're interested in supporting what we already feel and finding facts to delude ourselves into believing that someone we don't like or don't want is somehow automatically bad. This is very, very structurally destructive for our country and our future, and this whole issue is disgusting.
You know, Gina, it seems to me that Brett Kavanaugh is being made into every man. He represents all men. And, you know, I thought, you know, after everything over the last, you know, since the civil rights movement to the present, I thought we were all treated as individuals and not part of a tribe or a clan. And it seems to me that this is what this is all about. It's not about him. It's about politics and making sure that this president cannot fulfill his duties as president. I mean, we, you know, look at all of the nomination processes over the last 30 years or so. I mean, it's very partisan. The president gets the person in that he wants, okay? But not this time, it would seem. Gina, go ahead.
Yeah, the regressive left has trivialized individual rights that are enumerated in our Constitution, and there's a purpose for that. They are interested in socializing our government. They are interested in dismantling what is a Constitution based on negative rights, that's rights free from the imposition of government, and all the while acting in fascist ways while calling the right fascists. It's absolutely amusing. But if I were just being very partisan right now, I would say keep it up. because middle America is watching this. I don't expect the leftist elites on the coasts to see what they're doing to their own party. But if you look, the fundraising of the left is completely off, literally almost insolvent, while the Republicans are setting records this quarter. I really think that if they continue down this course of trying to name the right as the insane ones and this president as the sane one, while he's acted so level-headed, while having darts and thrown at him virtually all day, every single day, I really think that they are showing something about themselves to middle America. And middle America may not talk about it, but I promise you this, middle America will vote about it. That's what we saw in 2016. It's what we'll see in the 2018 midterms as well.
Okay, in the interest of saving time, I won't ask Jason a question. I'll let him react to what he's heard. Go ahead, Jason.
Wow, there's a lot there. Number one, in terms of the president being able to have a duty to put people on the court, Merrick Garland was given that opportunity, and Republicans blocked it, which actually was very regressive for our Constitution. The other thing that I would say in response to Brian is that if one person is nice to 65 women but assaults one, that doesn't take away from the one woman he assaulted. And that is, and I think it's offensive to say that sexual assault is somehow a teenage thing that boys go through. I was a teenager. I never sexually assaulted anybody, so I don't agree with
that.
The last thing I would say is this idea. Hold on, Gina.
Let him finish my point here. Because it's two against one. Jason, go ahead.
You know, and the last thing I will say is when we're talking about voting, number one, if you look at things like Texas, which may flip, Beto O'Rourke has out fundraised the Republicans. We've seen this all over the country that the House is going to flip. You're going to see a blue wave. And also you're seeing a lot more women running for office. And we're going to see women are going to turn because they see how the Republicans have treated accusers.
All right. I don't want to talk about the elections, guys. I want to stay on the Kavanaugh case and the rule of law. Brian, go ahead in Atlanta.
Yeah, I want to chime in on that because all of a sudden here, I feel like I'm in 2016 around September. We heard all the same arguments about flipping and Trump and Trump's going to lose and Hillary's going to win. That's the same narrative, and it's been going on the last 3 years, and the Democrats seem to have not gotten it yet. I do want to add to this whole discussion about women here. First of all, when teenagers are at a party drinking underage, which I presume is at least in part what was being accused of Kavanaugh and Dr. Ford, I took the time to explain all this to my 9-year-old daughter. And I said, when you're a teenager and you're at a party, it's not right for a guy to sexually assault you. But I'll tell you what is right, for you to leave a party where there's underage drinking or inappropriate drinking. There's accountability in all of this,
not just on
Brett Kavanaugh, but on the women as well
who come rushing out
to destroy someone 30 some odd years later. We don't want to have a discussion in this country
about
accountability, but we should.
Okay. All right. Gina, let me go to you before we go to
this. Kudos to my friend Brian there. But
go ahead, Gina. Go ahead in West Palm Beach. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say kudos to my friend Brian there for giving it the old-fashioned try there. But we can't expect the regressive left to care about the rule of law when it concerns teenage drinking if they don't care about the rule of law when it concerns an invasion of our country from illegals and the right of individuals to be innocent until proven guilty. If they don't care about that, Brian, they're not going to care about underage drinking.
Okay,
this is not about that.
Let me stay
this
with Gina. Let me stay
identity
with Gina.
Politics.
So Hang on, Gina, before we go to the break.
Gina, do you want the FBI to be investigating keg parties? Is that what the FBI is supposed to be doing?
I don't think anyone said anything about the FBI here, but I think it would be good if we could at least respect the rule of law and not ridicule when someone like Brian says, hey, maybe if you're a girl, you shouldn't be out doing this. You know, nothing justifies any kind of sexual assault. And I think
Agreed.
We need to be very careful there.
Agreed.
But we're not even talking about sexual assault. This woman
but
can't even remember
like
what happened to her. Neither can the other woman. And by the way, And by the way, I'm a woman, and that doesn't give me any more credibility to talk about this than it does any of the three of you. And by the way, I have daughters and I have sons, and I'm not just concerned about my daughters not, you know, being stuck in some bad situation someday. I'm worried about my sons being accused of something they didn't even do.
Very good point.
And losing an entire career over it.
All right, Gina, I have to jump in here.
That's what's wrong.
I have to jump in here. We have to go to a hard break. After our break, we'll continue our discussion on the rule of law. Stay with RT.
You're listening to Weekday World on CPR.
Okay, let me go back to Jason in Washington. Why should Brett Kavanaugh have to prove his innocence? I mean, isn't this really just turning the entire judicial tradition upside down? On top of it, Dr. Ford's lawyer said that she wanted to have her client, Dr. Ford, speak after Brett Kavanaugh. Well, that is just a perversion of the system, okay? And again, that looks like it's just playing politics here. Oh, and she has had 10 demands. Okay? I mean, since when do people make demands about how something is going to be investigated? Brett Kavanaugh has been investigated 6 times by the FBI. And in this Ramirez story, she spent days trying to recollect it and then calling people, "Do you remember what it was about?" And then she makes a claim, and then the New Yorker makes a fool out of itself. I mean, I think that if there's something to investigate, then do it. But there doesn't seem to be any there at all. Go ahead, Jason.
Well, again, I think that there needs to be a full investigation. And before I actually go into that, I will say that, you know, based on what your last guest just said, it sounded like they were blaming a 15-year-old girl for being at a party where there was drinking and saying that she deserved to be sexually assaulted. That was frightening. But beyond that,
no, that's not what
I will
we
say
said.
That
I
Mark
say,
Judge,
no
they need
that's
to bring
that's
out
that's
Mark Judge. Excuse me, I'm talking. Thank you.
Thanks, Brian.
You'll be able to respond.
Brian, hang on, because no one can hear what you're saying because you're talking over each other. Finish your point, Jason, and I will go to Brian.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. I think that we need a full investigation of these claims. I think she was making terms for her appearance in front of the Senate Judiciary Committee. And I think that that's not necessarily out of the ordinary. I think she's just trying to look out for her best interest, as any of us would. Remember, this is not a criminal trial. He's not going to go to prison afterward. They just want to find out whether he is fit for this position. They need to expand the
background
check in order to look into these
allegations. You know, Jason, the left has already convicted Kavanaugh. And this is what makes me really, really angry.
Oh, I disagree.
Okay, absolutely. Brian,
I haven't convicted him at all.
Brian, you know, Senator, let me go to Brian. Let me go to Brian in Atlanta. You know, Senator Feinstein had this letter. She sat on it. She talked to him private. There were the hearings, the confirmation hearings. And then all of a sudden, all of this comes out, then to delay and to delay, and then another person pops up. And these people have very strong political affiliations. Background does have substance here. I mean, this looks like just slow walking this to make sure that Judge Kavanaugh doesn't get his day in the court of public appearance. I mean, it's all just a smear against him because Jason says there should be an investigation. Okay, where's the house? What's the address? What was the date? I mean, what do you want the FBI to do? Go ahead in Atlanta, Brian.
Yeah, let's remember the Duke lacrosse team and the prosecutor who no longer has a law license. Those kids, those boys were victims. They were accused of something that later was determined didn't happen. And when we take to this and try to judge a man from 30 plus years ago, that's the problem. If these accusations were 3 years ago or 5 years ago or 10 years ago, they certainly carry more gravity in my mind. But not only have they been sitting in a box for 3 decades, they were sitting on Dianne Feinstein's desk for 3 months waiting for political timing. Sexual assault allegations are not for political timing. They are for reporting at the time they happen for prosecution. To do it 30 plus years later to me is irrelevant. I operate on a 10-year rule. If the allegation is over 10 years old, I judge the man or the woman of the last 10 years, not what someone says they did, air quotes, 15, 20, 40 years ago. I'm sorry, I don't care. I care about sexual assault. I have a daughter. And it was just misaccounted after the break by Jason. I said I spoke to my daughter about this. And if she's ever at a party, underage drinking is occurring, to leave because bad things happen. That doesn't make it her fault. That means I'm preparing her to not be sexually assaulted. It's called accountability on both sides. And I know the left knows nothing of that.
Okay, Gina, you know, the one thing that really drives me up the wall is this whole politics of victimization. You know, and I would say in all of this, the rhetoric is also made Kavanaugh a victim. We will probably never, ever know if anything ever happened. But we have in the public sphere right now, in parenthetically in Kavanaugh's file, he was accused of this of these potential crimes here. That, again, that is not the rule of law. That is smearing people. And I think this is one of the things that really bothers me, because it is so polarized, the country. And I think it hurts relations that men and women should have. I mean, there is this heightened sense of a chilling effect, as it were, here, that you can be accused of something going all the way back to high school, when I think most of us, I'm probably the oldest one here, I don't remember much about high school. Go ahead, Gina.
Yeah, I think you make a great point. I, in fact, just finished a whole book on this. Shameless plug. It's called Mad Politics. But what I'm talking about in the book is the fact that the left is fine with tribalizing us. They don't mind that at all, because that's where they get their money and power. If they can break us down into little groups and make us all angry and afraid of one another, then they can control us. And this isn't an American phenomenon. This isn't a present day phenomenon. This is something that leftist regressives and totalitarians have done throughout world history. So there's no reason why, when they're admitting now that they're socialists, we should be surprised that they're continuing to try to parse us up into little groups. But you look at the movement right now, most of my formerly Democrat friends who are women think this is the most ridiculous thing they've ever witnessed. And the Democrats have exposed themselves in ways I know they didn't mean to in this. And I would ask your guest, Jason, you know, he keeps saying that she should be heard, that there should be an investigation, as you pointed out. And thank you for that. There have been 6 FBI investigations, and this is actually out of their jurisdiction, because you can't investigate a crime that you don't have a person, a place, or a thing to investigate, right? But I want to ask Jason, and this is my distinct question to him, and I really want to hear his answer, and I want specificity.
Gina wants to ask Jason a question. Gina, ask your question. Please go.
Right.
Go ahead.
I just want to know why we should investigate this. Why? Based on what evidence? Because I know of zero evidence other than somebody making an accusation, which could happen to you tomorrow.
And there was no police report.
So there is some evidence of this. Number one, Christine, Dr. Ford, actually took a polygraph test and passed it. She told her psychologist, that's on record,
that means
in
nothing.
2012. So these are all things that I think warrant an investigation into these claims. And as a matter of fact, there are other claims that are coming out.
You named
so
one
I
thing.
I think we should at least investigate. And again, hold on. You asked me a question. I'll answer it if you allow
she
me
She won't
to.
Release the polygraph test. It's immaterial, Jason.
Okay,
she won't
so
release the polygraph test.
You want to answer
test.
Your own
you
question.
You know why? Because she probably wasn't asked pertinent questions.
So you're not, you don't want me to answer your
she
question.
Probably, she probably.
You're going to answer your own question.
Okay, hey, I'm going to jump
well,
in here.
You didn't answer
I'm,
it because
I'm probably
because
the only
took
person
the
here.
Test.
I'm probably the only person here that has actually taken a polygraph test, okay? It's not what you think it is. It's not a lie detector. It's a truth detector. And it's all about the questions you ask, okay? Depending on what you want to get. No wonder it's inadmissible in a court, okay? And, Jason, I have to say to you that most prosecutors, and I mean, most of these people in Congress talking about this issue have a legal background. I mean, they really wasted a lot of money at Yale and Princeton if they can't get the simple principles of the rule of law together. No prosecutor would go to court over these. It's hearsay. He said, she said. There's no evidence, no forensic evidence here. No one would take it to trial. But you want to take it to trial in public.
But
that's what it is. It's a public opinion trial.
Peter,
that's what it is. Go ahead, Jason.
Right, Peter, but this is not a criminal trial. like I said, Judge Kavanaugh is not at risk of criminal prosecution. That's not what this is about. This is about his fitness to serve on the Supreme Court of the United States. So that's what this is about. And I think I know I wouldn't want someone who has sexually assaulted several people to be, or even one person, to be on the Supreme Court. That's what this is all about.
I mean, there you go again. See, you're assuming it's true, okay? I think a lot of people watching this program would like to know what the truth is.
I didn't make that assumption.
And unfortunately, Jason, we may never know what that truth is for the many reasons that I've already mentioned on this program. Brian wants to jump in Atlanta. Go ahead.
I'm wondering why the last 30 years of his life, a good record, a clean record. You might not agree with his positions in the judiciary, but he's got a good record for 30 years. Guy, let's assume for a second he made a mistake. Something happened. He had a criminal activity when he was a teenager. Does that mean he can never recover and be an integrated, successful, meaningful person in American society? That means almost no one's qualified for anything anymore. We can't destroy each other on this. And let me bring up a point about something from the timeline that Jason just mentioned. Back in 2012, Mitt Romney mentioned Judge Kavanaugh as a potential nominee for the Supreme Court were he elected as president. It was 2012 when Brett Kavanaugh, the accuser, Dr. Ford, rather, went to the psychologist. The timing of that is rather eerie. Was it a result of his name being mentioned publicly, or more likely the left bringing someone to the surface that they could concoct and produce a story that could block a potential conservative nominee for Romney? And they kept this under file for many years. And now it's come out into
Steve,
the public.
I'm going to give
the left is behind this more than they're willing to admit.
30 seconds left. Jason, it's yours. Go ahead.
So I just wanted to say, number one, we've seen the right oftentimes, you know, they're contradicting themselves. Number one, we've seen Juanita Broderick brought up many times, and that was maybe 45 years ago. And people are still talking about it. And I believe Juanita Broderick had every right to talk about what happened to her. And what brought her out into the fore was the fact that she saw this man becoming president. It's the same thing here. When you see somebody rising and rising, and you see them more in the public eye. Yes,
all
that
right,
can
Jason,
be re-traumatizing if this indeed occurred.
I have to jump in, Jason. We've run out of time.
Him.
But
sure.
Bill Clinton was guilty of sexual assault. That's all the time we have. Many thanks to my guests in Washington, Atlanta, and in West Palm Beach. And thanks to our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. And remember, Crosstalk Rules.
You're listening to Weekday World on CPR, CommunityPublicRadio.org. I'm your host, Don DeBar.